Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray and Brad Williams for the About Last Night podcast.
That's right.
Yes.
Another fun-filled episode this time.
This was, we just got done with this episode, and it's one of...
Dion Cole, man.
Yeah, dude, he brought it. If you don't know who Dion Cole is, you're an idiot, but you probably do, because he's one of the head writers on Conan's show on TBS. He was with him on The Tonight Show, now on Conan on TBS. He had Dion Cole's Black Box on TBS. He's about to be in a new show with Rashida Jones and Steve Carell. On TBS called Tribeca House.
Angie Tribeca.
Angie.
Yes, or Tribeca House. I don't know. Maybe it's a house. Maybe it's a reality show with people from Tribeca. I don't know.
Could work.
It's
spin-off.
Like a, yeah, real world for the new generation. Who knows, Adam Ray?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's going to eat the peanut butter?
By the,
That's a season one real world reference.
It is.
Respect.
By the way, how come Real World Dwarf hasn't happened yet?
How come Real World Dwarf hasn't happened yet? Dwarf House? Little House?
Dwarf House.
Dwarf House. Oh, my God.
I think they're playing at Coachella next week.
Dwarf House.
Dion Cole is the shit. You're going to love this episode. Follow him on Twitter at Dion Cole. Follow Brad at Funny Brad. Follow me at Adam Ray Comedy. Of course, Brad and I's tour dates on our websites, bradwilliamscomedy.com and adamraytv.com, where you can pick up Pop-Tart Suicide, my latest album, and also see me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Come see me on the road at Gotham Comedy Club in New York City, June 17th through June 22nd. I also will be at the Hollywood Improv June 4th and June 3rd at 10 p.m. both shows, and then headline
You got some of that Oprah pussy in your mouth. You'll find out why that's funny later.
I'll be having a stroke in my apartment June 27th and 28th. I'll be headlining the La Jolla Comedy Store in San Diego, California, doing 20 minutes of jokes and then 30 minutes of improvised singing with Jeff Scott, the piano player, singing jokes, improvising songs with the crowd. It's going to be something I've never done before, but it's going to be awesome. So come out and see me.
Yeah, and then come out to see me, Knoxville, Tennessee, talking to you. I'll be there June 5th through the 7th at Sidesplitters, Knoxville, Tennessee. And then Bonnaroo, doing the Bonnaroo Festival June 12th through the 15th. I'll be at the Comedy Tent. That's in Manchester, Tennessee. And then I'm going to take a little hiatus. I'm going to go watch the World Cup in Brazil.
Please come back.
I'm going to try it. I'm going to try not to die.
Got
to
be honest.
A
part of me is concerned, but I won't voice that too loudly because I don't want to put anything out there.
Right,
I think you're gonna be fine. But
thank you, fans, for tweeting me all the fucked up stories that are happening in Brazil, like beheadings, like when a UFC fighter got mugged. So I'm feeling very safe.
Just know that if I have to replace you, it won't be Dinklage.
Yeah.
Just know that.
Fuck you, Dinklage. Yeah. You're not getting my podcast. You can have X-Men.
Yeah.
Not getting my podcast,
have
asshole.
Have Game of Thrones pussy and all that money and whatever.
Right, right, right. But you're not getting the About Last Night show.
You ain't getting the presents of Rite Aid jar candles, motherfucker.
But I'll be coming back, and then I'm doing a show, Pasadena, California. I'm going to be at the Ice House July 3rd. This is my I Survived Brazil. I'm going to talk about Brazil.
Perfect.
And we're going to have some good times there, so come on out. And then also, I need you guys to do one more thing. You want to know what that one more thing is, Adam Ray?
Download the podcast on aboutlastnight.podcast.com, iTunes,
sure,
or Stitcher.
That.
Start a business.
Sure.
But what if I have a business where I have flavored condoms that you can eat after you... You fuck with them.
Well, if you have a business that has flavored condoms that you could eat after you fuck, first of all, your name is Willy Wonka. B, you should advertise that business by going to mymetalbusinesscard.com. Now you're like, but Brad, I have a business card. I bet you do. But I bet it's paper. I bet it's flimsy. I bet the ink runs. And I bet that it gets torn up and that when you hand it to people, they throw it away. That's not going to happen.
I bet.
With mymetalbusinesscard.com.
I bet it's paper. I bet it's flimsy is what my teacher said to me when I told her I made the first origami porn star.
I bet, man. MyMetalBusinessCard.com. This is a business card made of stainless steel.
Shit,
Adam Ray.
That's so baller.
That it is. I got two of them right here. You want to know what happens when... See? That's fucking metal. That's metal right there, banging on metal.
That's Brad also, what it sounds like when Brad fucks a birdhouse every 4th of July.
Well, as is the dwarf tradition. to fuck a birdhouse.
As is the dwarf tradition.
So go to mymetalbusinesscard.com. It's stainless steel, 0.5 millimeters of thickness. You get one color for free, then you can add another color on. There's precision artwork. These things make an impression. They leave people knowing who you are, and they want people to get involved with your business. You can custom design it. You can put things like, you can put a bottle opener on it. You can make it copper. You can make it black. And you know what? Not just business cards. Let's say you want a metal wedding invitation, because you know those wedding invitations suck. They're all like, our wedding invitation is lots of flowers. You want metal. You Satan sponsors this wedding.
Metal invitations.
That's right. You can go to mymetalbusinesscard.com and get a metal wedding invitation if you want that. Party invitations, anything and everything. Do it over at mymetalbusinesscard.com. Hit them up. Tell them the About Last Night podcast sent you. They will give you a discount. I know these guys. I went to high school with one of the founders.
Fuck yeah.
His name is Craig. Good dude.
Craig is always a good dude. Support Craig. Support the business. Support the podcast. Go see Brad and I on tour. But now, sit back, relax, and enjoy this amazing episode of the About Last Night podcast with Mr. Dion Cole.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to a no podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's About Last Night.
So when you met Ron Artest wearing that Queensbridge T-shirt, like you were wearing that shirt?
No, I was at the Nas concert.
Oh, okay.
And he was on stage with Nas, and I bought the shirt. I bought the shirt before the concert.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I saw him on stage. But yeah, he was at the concert.
It was a sign.
It was out here too. It was out here.
Was your shit?
Yeah.
Where was this at? That's
Nas performing with Lauryn Hill.
Jesus.
Yeah,
she's still holding it down.
It's crazy as shit, man.
She's gonna be at Bonnaroo too.
Is she really?
Yeah. She goes by Miss Lauryn Hill now.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Is Nas in your top five of rappers?
Yeah.
There you go.
You know, here's a little story about Stroming My Pain with his finger.
Stroming My Pain.
That song. You know, my introduction to that song was, I think it was seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
When that came out for me, and there was a little white girl who sang it at the talent show, and it was like she came out and she was like totally not somebody who would look like they'd be singing that, and she fucking, it was one of those, like, you see those clips of like America's Got Talent, like some British woman who comes out and she's like, you know,
looks like
a janitor from the 40s, right. And she's just like, I'm gonna sing a song, and then she fucking kills it. That's what this girl did. I'm telling you, people were laughing. Seventh grade too, so everyone's such in that middle school, like, look at this fucking bitch trying to
have
some talent, and she crushed it, dude.
Killed it.
And it was like standing O, and it was That's like dope. I'll never forget it. And then I was like, Lauryn Hill can never compete with what I just saw. Anytime I heard Lauryn Hill, like, she's no Rebecca Sage or whatever. You know?
I mean,
from Kellogg Middle School.
Yeah, so if you ever met her, you'd be like, Lauren, you're great, but there's a 10-year-old white girl back in Seattle. I don't know if you want to get a vocal coach or something. Maybe learn how to sound like that a little better. Yeah, but you can do that. but you're from Chicago though, and there's a strong hip hop presence in Chicago. Right, like I know Kanye's from there, and then
Common,
else from Chicago? Oh, Common's from
Common,
Chicago
too. Twista, the Brat.
Is Keith Sweat from there?
No. I love Keith Sweat. Though.
He's not even trying to lay claim to Keith Sweat. Yeah. Hell.
Even if he was, you said that in a way that was like, we don't claim Sweat, man. KS is on his own.
I'd be trying to claim Sweat if he was in like 800 miles of where I was born. Like, oh, yeah. Stockton, California? Yeah, that's right next to Orange County. Keith Sweat's ours.
There's got to be people still fucking to Keith Sweat.
I love Sweat. I just, last year, I was like one of the producers on the Soul Train Awards when we had him as we had him as an honoree, life achievement.
Yeah.
Honoree, yeah.
Total sense.
And he went on and he had hit after hit. Like, people forgot how many hits Keith had.
Yeah. It's not just nobody. Love you like me, nobody. Wow. Yeah. It's also,
girl, you got me twisting away. I know. I got to leave right here.
I'm fucking right now. I don't know if you guys know this, but those are like
some midget just walked out of the table and I'm hitting it hard.
Dude, I wonder what happens when a midget sings Key Sweat.
Oh my god,
there's got to be some sort of like fucking really smooth Soul Train rainbow that shows up.
Just because it's like the Soul Train line, but it's just midgets in the Soul Train line, and we just start doing mini robots coming down.
Hey, maybe an idea for next year's award show.
Nice, I like.
How was it working on that?
It was great, man. Yeah. It was great. It was the first time I did something like that, but it was great, you know, to shoot something, you know, live like that and put it together. It was great. It was a great experience.
Is the producing stuff? Because obviously everybody knows you as writer, actor, comic, Conan, Black Box. Which what the fuck, man? Black Box.
I know, man. It was great.
It was great. And I think, I mean, I'm assuming you're trying to work it into somewhere else. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The thing that happened was a lot of the stuff started coming up, you know. So as I was taking these meetings with these other networks to get Black Box somewhere else, you know, where we had a understanding, other things started happening. Yeah. So
great problem to have.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have. So I had to like kind of push it on the back burner for a minute. Yeah. But don't get me wrong, it's still alive and in effect.
Yeah,
waiting to go to
because such a good network. Show, man. You just were such a you've got such a strong voice. Also, I just feel like for me, when I'm watching somebody host a show that's like basically being them the whole time, and you're not just a talking head. Like I feel like I'm watching like the way I see when you're on stage doing stand up, and you're like, I mean, Dion Cole, full and exposed, and you're the same way with your show, man. You're just like what you see is what you get.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, that was a whole, you know, thought process behind this, trying to be like this water cooler guy that's just, you know, like, you know, just speaking from what I feel. And that's what I think, that's the difference between all shows is perspective. Yeah. You know, I mean,
sure,
it's the same. I like to say it's the same wheel, different rim. You know, that's all it is.
It sounds like that might be a Keith Sweat lyric.
Same wheel, different rim.
You're killing it.
What, but Conan's still,
Full. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
How does that even, now, when you come out here from Chicago, comedy's already been happening in Chicago. Uh-huh, yeah. Like stand up and then any sketch, or just all stand up and then.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did sketch too. I worked at Second City in Chicago for a while. We had a group called The Forgotten City. And we worked at Second City on top of Frank Katina's wedding, like every Friday night. Nice. We did sketches and we did all that. But yeah, stand up was always first. And then I went into, you know, writing.
How do you even get into stand up?
How did I get into
it? Like, for me, I was like, that I saw on SNL, which is what I want to do, I was like, did stand up, I felt like, which wasn't even true. I mean, all those guys came from sketch, but I just felt a couple of them did it, so I was like, I got to do it because of that. What was your.
It was a bet.
The rumor that I read on the internet was true, because I read on the internet that someone dared
17
you.
Inches. Like, another rumor.
That rumor. That
you 17 inches? That was another rumor.
Yeah, you dragged that thing in here. I think you put out 3 of Adam's candles with that thing.
Dion was like, where am I going to park it? I was like, your car on Hollywood Boulevard. He goes, no, in my cock. I was like, I'm down at the Laugh Factory, man. There's an extra.
That's a recent rumor. That wasn't the new one. The old one.
But like, I read on the internet that someone dared you, like, and said, I'll give you $50 if you go on stage and do stand up. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. Yeah, this dude bet me $50. Because I never was no funny dude. Like, I wasn't.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't funny. I was on some ill shit in Chicago. Like, ill shit. Like,
no kidding.
So I was never funny.
You were just hanging with not funny crowds or what?
I wasn't shit funny around what we was doing. It was just the fact that my perception was always. Had the dudes I was with kind of laughing. Like, if somebody tripped and fell in front of me and my dudes, like, they'll be laughing. I will be more like, why did that motherfucker fall? Like, why didn't they see that chair? Like, that chair was just sitting there. Like, it's a big-ass orange chair. Why would you not see that shit?
Like, so you'd be, like, the more observational.
But I wasn't joking. You know, I was, like, dead ass.
Yeah.
Which made motherfuckers laugh, but people was like, they used
so
to
dry,
always be, yeah,
dry, straight dry.
And they used to be like, boy, you crazy. And then one day, one of my dudes was like, I bet you won't go on stage. I bet you $50. And I was like, I ain't going on the $50. And he was like, I'll give you another 50. I give you like $100 if you go up there. And I was just like, all right. And he was like, I'll give you 50 when you go on, 50 when you get off. And so we went down to the club and they wouldn't let me on. And we went for 3 weeks, and I got on, and I got a standing ovation the first time.
No shit. And you're like, oh, my God. Well, this stand-up thing is easy.
It was crazy because I left, and I was like, damn. I started going, this is why I was born and shit. Like, what? I was going through this whole shit, like, yo, this is why I'm here. But this comedian told me, he was a hater at the time. He told me if I bombed.
You can say his name, Dave Cooley. Yeah. Keep going.
Hilarious. He said if I bombed, I had to quit stand-up.
What?
And so I was like, oh, okay. So like maybe a month later.
Yeah.
I was getting these standing ovations, but like a month later, nobody laughed at my shit, and it was just dead ass crowd.
Why do you think that is?
And I quit.
Oh, no shit?
I quit for 3 weeks because I thought that's what I was supposed to do, and this dude saw me in a mall. And he was like, dude, where the fuck you been? And yeah. I was like, man, I bombed. Like,
so I'm out.
Yeah. I'm out, right. And they were like,
you
no,
thought that's how it worked.
Yeah.
You get to do it as long as you crush.
Until you bombed, then it was over. So I quit for like 3 weeks. And then they was like, nah, dude, everybody been looking for you. And I went back to the club, and I did that same little 5 minutes. And was just
so once you knew you had a second life, you probably were even that much more excited to get back into it.
Yeah, right? but I only had, like, at this time, I think I had like probably like 8 minutes, and then like after 4 months, I got on a show called Comic Justice. I was on Comedy Central. And then after that 4 months, 8 months later, I was on Def Jam. So
shit, after 4 months of doing stand-up?
Yeah, I was on this show called Comic Justice after 4 months, and then after that, it was just this 5 minutes that I had. Yeah. And that 5 minutes went to this 10 minutes that I had. That was just, I don't know why I was slaying like that. It was it just was, and plus, I was like, I had this notepad, like, you know how I do with my notepad on stage.
Yeah, I saw you on the Lopez Tonight with that.
Yeah. So
you've been doing that from the
Yeah, because awesome. I used to be so high, I just couldn't remember that shit.
That's where the notepad started?
Yeah. Because now it's like
such a great endearing thing that, like, is so likable because you won't reference it all the time. But
I don't do it all the time, but I do it every now and then. Like, if I got short sets, like television, doing 5, 15, 10 minutes, then I'll pull it out. But if I'm doing 45 an hour, I just really won't pull it out. But when I did Def Jam, I did, like, 7 minutes on Def Jam, which was half of my material. And then when I went on tour, I had no more material.
Oh.
So I was getting booed. Left and right on tour, and then they kicked me off the Def Jam tour.
What? Now, did they
just not bringing it?
I didn't have no material. Yeah. I was up there doing knock-knock jokes. And talking about people in the audience, just trying to stretch my time.
Because you just had to retire all that stuff from Def Jam.
I had to retire the Def Jam.
What a crazy thing to happen, like, after all. Like, how many people can say they've gone through something like that? Where you experienced that much success right off the bat, and then all of a sudden, the pressure and expectations are now so high for you.
Yeah.
And complimented that with the fact that you don't realize that, I need to have more than what I just did.
Exactly.
And then when you don't, to be in that, like...
And nobody to tell you that.
Of course. Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you just going with your minutes until you get into that position. They go, where's your new shit? And you just like, what?
New shit? I thought
they wanted to see what they saw on TV. Like, nah. And so after I did like 3 shows, Russell and them was just like, it's time for you to go home. And they sent me home.
Dude,
and I remember sitting in the airport with my Def Jam jacket and hat on.
Listening to Nobody can love me like me, Bianco. Nobody loves me.
Oh, man, dude.
I went home, man, and just sat there. It was just like, that was the beginning, though. I was sat there and I was like, man, I need to write.
Well, because now
you had a taste of it.
That
was the beginning of me going, okay, next time they see me, I'm a have so much material. And that was the beginning of me writing unconsciously. Like writing stuff for Second City and writing sketches and shows and skits and movies.
And that shows you what type of comic you are, because some comics being put in that situation where they get the hammer dropped on them would be like, all right, fuck it, that was tough. But you took that as, nah, I love getting standing ovations. That was fucking fun. I want to do that again.
Yeah, I mean, my jokes I'm telling got me like on planes, flying around for first class,
yeah,
city fans right. and all this, and all of a sudden you go, no. I was like, nah. Nah, I'm about to go home. I'm about to write. I'm going to write unconsciously, mm-hmm. and they're going to see me again. That's just what was on my mind.
Did you have any sort of, you were saying like movies and sketches and stuff. So, I mean, you were just trying to, I'm going to do it all. I want to have to.
It was just thoughts that was coming to my head, and I knew that, you know, certain things were for certain formats. You know, I always knew that. I'd be like, man, this might not be good for my stand-up, but this seemed like it'd be good in a skit, or this seemed like it'd be good for a movie scene. So I used to, like, categorize certain things and just jot it down. Awesome. And over the years, I just had stuff, like, stockpiled and just ready for somebody to give me the chance.
You pull any of that stuff from back then, like, to
Absolutely.
Conan?
Yeah. When I first got to Conan, Conan had no idea that I did any of that. He hired me just off of feeling. Like he had no idea. Like, because I performed on the show. I thought I performed on the Tonight Show. Probably like 2 weeks later, they was like, "Yo, he wants to hire you, and whatever wow. shows you got or whatever, don't even worry about it. Just be there Monday." And I'm like, I got to submit something. They're like, nah, I just want you there Monday. So
what is that whole like call and weekend like of leading up until it? Are you just like on cloud nine? I mean,
it was crazy. Like, yeah, I was working. Everybody was booking me. It was great.
So you were starting to get some momentum. So it wasn't like completely out of nowhere.
I was getting crazy momentum through like NACA, like the colleges. Oh, yeah. Like I was going crazy. And then like a lot of people respected that I did a late night television show because I wasn't like one of these comics that were already in the system or that was molded towards a white audience per se.
Yeah,
that was
gotcha.
had white friendly material.
Right,
I was a motherfucker on the Chitlin circuit,
real Chitlin circuit.
Yeah, yo, that's what niggas used to call it. It's called the Chitlin circuit, and it just gives. That's what you do. You'll be gone for 3 weeks, going from bar to bar to bar.
So it's like
all your luggage in the back of a
so it's like you
Civic, just
Corey Holcomb hamburger
all, everybody Hannibal we're all in this hatchback just from city to city just
grinding it, man.
Good Chitlin circuit.
Yeah, so because we couldn't do the improvs, we didn't have no names to get into the improvs and the zanies and the funny bones. So only thing we can do is like bars and little shits that people put together. So for me to come from that circuit and go straight to the Tonight Show was like,
it's a big deal,
and it made other people on the circuit go, man, if we get our material together, we can make it too.
Dude, that's awesome.
So it was an inspirational thing for people that was in that scene,
and that's
more
good
than anything.
And that's good that you recognize that to be like, I've got to cross over. I can't just be doing these rooms, because I think some comics, whether it be a black comic or a Mexican comic or whatever, they get into that sort of circuit and then they get too comfortable. They're like, oh, well, this is fine. I'm making
my money.
Yeah, I'm making my $200 a week.
Right.
I'm good.
Yeah.
But then you're like, nah, dude, I got to take it to the next level.
Because you're a comedian. You're not a black comedian.
Right.
You're not a white comedian.
Exactly.
You're a comedian.
He's trying to be funny.
Right?
Yep.
Right?
Oh,
so
you're
supposed to make everyone laugh. It ain't just, you know what I'm saying? I feel bad when I just make black people laugh. I don't even keep that joke. Sometimes, don't get me wrong, I got a joke I'll write, and black people get it, and I use it every now and then, but that ain't one that I keep. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even feel good keeping that. And even when I do something that only white people get it, black people don't get it, I don't really like keeping it.
Do you try not to do only, like room-specific crowds like that? Like,
Hell
the all-black shows, you try to, I mean, you do them, right?
But you still want to be you.
Yeah.
And all
you don't cater
them.
To that crowd.
You try not to cater to that crowd. You get what I'm saying? Don't get me wrong. Sometimes when you're around a black crowd, you might have to add a few more motherfuckers in your
I was just going
to
ask, what is it?
You might add a few more extra motherfuckers. In a white crowd, you might pull
some of those back.
Drop
a few more in bombs.
You might throw nigga in here a little bit.
I like that shit. Probably one of my worst bombs ever was in front of a black audience, because I was the idiot that thought that, like, oh, well, I'm this little white boy, so I should go up there and talk like I'm black. It's like, Brad, because that's not your shit. That's not what
and
I
they
do.
See through
and they
it.
See right through.
Yeah, they see right through it. That's just like a white boy coming up to you going, what's up, brother?
For sure.
Like, you don't talk like that, motherfucker.
Dude, first, you know, I did the first all black crowd I did was hosting for Sinbad at the Ontario Improv, right?
That's an all black crowd?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'd say like 95. I mean, throughout the weekend it was mixed, but And same thing, like I didn't think I might have asked somebody, or Chris Fonseca was opening for him and said like, don't. He was like, you know, Chris Fonseca. Have you ever met him?
Yeah, I think
little
so.
Guy in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Don't just try to be black." And I was like, "Okay, I think I got that."
But that's coming from the guy in the wheelchair. So how the hell is he trying to be black? Like, what's he doing to blacken up his material? Like, you put rims on the wheelchair or some shit? Right? What the fuck is wrong with him?
Dude. But I did definitely remember getting up there and being like, don't change your shit. But I remember hearing myself go, "How y'all feeling tonight?" Went like right off the bat, and I heard myself say it and was like, "Dude, shut the fuck up! What are you doing?" And I saw a couple people in the front row kind of like go, "The fuck?" Yeah.
Thank
God I'm wearing my puffy vest and like a plaid polo, you know, just like my hair's all pooped up like fucking Johnny Bravo.
And of course that doesn't work. That would be like a guy walking up in front of all midgets going, and he's tall going, "Huh?" We're gonna fucking hate you. No, I mean, we all have done that.
You know, I know I've went on stage where, "Hey guys, how y'all feeling?" I'm like, "Guys," I don't even say that shit.
Well, you have that great fucking bit about the comics in between. Was it like the in between when you're trying to segue to a joke, the transition?
Oh, shit's like crazy. Shit, yeah.
What is it?
Shit is crazy. Yeah. It's wild.
What is that in context of again?
Give it up for the ladies.
So funny, dude.
All that bullshit, you know, when your jokes don't work.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's funny.
It's
funny you say that. Gene Pompa once did a set at the Hollywood Improv that I saw where he went on stage and then said every line that comics do to get an applause break.
Yes.
So, and he did it totally on purpose just to make fun of the shit. So he walks up on stage and goes, "Yeah, just had myself a daughter." And the audience just starts clapping. And he's like, "Yeah, you know, I had to have the daughter because I just got married." And then everyone starts clapping again.
Oh, yeah.
"I don't know, but she's crying a lot, so I'm going to go perform for the troops, everybody." Okay, all right.
Oh, man. All the hits.
Yeah.
All the hits. That's hilarious.
And like the audience at first was like, "This guy's the worst comic ever," but then they got it.
Then they got it.
And they were just rolling with the comics from the back, just dying laughing.
That's clever, man.
So have you seen the actual influence of you like saying you went through the that grind of those like tours to bars, and then when you got the Conan gig? I mean, were people like hitting you up actively, being like, "Dude, Dion, you're fucking like you did it, man." So like, I'm hitting it. I mean, were comics
It was like other places that I'll go perform and do shows, man. It'd be comics from everywhere at my shows. I used to just show up and tell me thank you for inspiration. And
even your hometown is fucking having a chance. Put you up on a pedestal.
Yeah, that home is crazy right now. It's real crazy. Anytime
it's the best,
I go
there.
Yeah, it's nuts anytime I go there.
We did a show at, when I saw you in Chicago at the Laugh Factory, and then you were doing, I was out there with Chris, and then you put me on. So dope.
Yeah,
he'd be
crazy.
Packed in the shows, like the Dion Cole show. And I get upstage, it's my birthday, and he's like, "Dude, we had met a few times. Just such a coolest motherfucker, dude." I added a motherfucker because I'm around a black guy. But I'll pull it back. No, but seriously, dude,
no,
it was like,
it's great.
You literally were like, "Dude, you want to just stay and do the show?" And it was like packed, and it was the coolest, man.
Because I loved your material, and I used to watch you here at the Laugh Factory and just be like, "Damn, that dude's a motherfucker, just, man."
Dude's a motherfucker.
Yeah,
why is it that I remember one time I hated
to follow you one night.
The Laugh Factory?
Oh, one night. Oh, my God.
You didn't like it?
Dude, you crushed. I was just like, "What am I supposed to do after this month?"
Go home is like one of the options.
I was
right?
just like, I went up there like, give it up for oxygen. Like, how many people breathing in the night? Like,
it was crazy.
All the bullshit. Yeah, Shit is crazy out here.
Well, thank you, man.
Dude, I remember I was in the back like, "Oh my God, what the fuck am I going to do after BS?"
But dude, again, shit like that, man, I'm sure like, you know, just makes you, it makes you raise your game.
It makes you go,
"I gotta go home." Yeah. Like anytime that's happened, the first time I had to follow like Aziz at a Comedy Juice show, and I was like, "Fuck, man!" And it went all right, but I was like, "Dude, that immediately made me go, all right, I gotta bring it harder. I gotta get to, you know, put pen to paper even more so because." You just don't want to be in those situations.
Absolutely.
Where you have any sort of, I mean, it's natural, even at any level, I think, to be like, to see somebody murder so hard that you're like,
but Hollywood is good for that. It like is. Out here, you're all going these on clubs, after the monsters. You're going home, after, you're going on after monsters all the time. Yeah. You'll walk in the room and they'll be like, all right, you're right after Ray Romano. You'd be like, what? What? I came here to do some new shit.
Yeah, like, I'm working stuff out.
Yeah,
what?
I don't want to be on like that. Like,
you think that's an advantage out here versus like, I mean,
anywhere else? Because it's steps your game up and it gives you confidence, because once you do go after Ray Romano and you murder that shit,
people don't forget it.
Yeah, and you don't forget it. Yeah, and you leave with a whole nother sense of pride about yourself. I've done it many nights, coming after Chris Tucker, Ray Romano, Tim Allen, Tommy Davidson, like crushes. I came out the
I was gonna ask you what once you started to kind of really like climb, like what were some of the shows that like made you go, all right, I'm like things are starting to fucking pop. Like,
I mean, what shows guys, I was on,
what guys that you got to perform with that maybe you like.
Oh shit, like me
just
me
named
with,
a bunch.
Like me with like we did the Aspen Comedy Festival and it was this show I'll never forget. True story. It was I was first, and then it was D. Ray Davis.
Monster.
It was Bill Bellamy.
Monster.
Chris Tucker.
Who?
Damon Wayans. Hilarious. Oh, Damon Wayans.
Who's still crushing it.
Dave Chappelle. Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude.
And
this is an all-star line.
It was one other person. Damn, it was one other person.
Rita Rudner.
Hilarious. It was one more, but I can't remember. We were all on the same bill.
Dude, that's unreal.
Like, and I kept the lineup. I mean, the smart enough that was on the wall.
Yeah,
I snatched that shit off the wall. I was like, I'm keeping this.
Dude, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Because those shows don't, I mean, out here, like, you know, there are so many dope people out here and in New York. I think more so out here now because everyone knows that they got to be out here if they want shit to go up a notch.
Right.
But lineups like that are like, those come together every so often.
At festivals, because they have you confined in this festival where you can't go nowhere and do nothing. So, yeah, they put this list of black comics that was there that was like, yo, we're going to put them all
together.
They're
like, this is the best of the best.
Yes.
And you're a part of
one show. Yeah. And that was like, that was the show that I was like, okay, these motherfuckers know who I am. Yeah. I know who they are. I've been following them. They're heroes of mine.
You talk to Dave Chappelle and shit, and he knows who you are. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And we just all had a good camaraderie, and we kicked it all weekend, and it was love.
When you kick it with somebody like that, like for me, like Dave is like my favorite. So like I would feel you want to just act like you're on their level and just be cool, which you got to do.
Yeah, you just be super cool.
But I think after a while, like how can you not like ask any sort of
I just sit the fuck back, man. I let them gear that train because I don't want to come off no wrong way.
Right.
I got a bad habit of being around singers that I like and singing their songs right next to them. Like, I do that shit all the time, and it is the worst.
Now,
I'll be
yo,
so
Brian McKnight.
One, you like a dream come true. That's me.
I'd like to eat with you. Three,
that's me.
I got my car and Quiznos is down the motherfucking street tonight.
That's me. That's what I do.
Brian's just sitting there like, I know that song.
I know, right.
Who has that happened to? For sure there's examples of that.
Oh, I've done that to Nas. I've done that to R. Kelly. That was even before I knew him. That was R. Kelly. I done it to H-Town. Remember them back in the time? Knocking boots.
Yeah, dude.
I've done it to everybody.
And then you did a tour with Mary J. Blige. Is that right? Did you do a tour with Mary?
I did do a tour. I did the Budweiser Superfest. That was years ago. That was like, that's when Heavy D was rocking.
You're naming everything on my
Warren
iPod.
Warren G album was popping.
Shut the fuck up.
That was the year.
Regulators?
Regulators was popping.
One of the best songs
I was on that tour.
I love that shit.
Yeah, it was crazy. Crazy. We were doing like 25,000 a night.
What is that like?
It was insane. You had to wait like 2 minutes. You had to wait at least about a minute between each
joke.
The
laugh ripples all the way up, right?
So the laughter to stop, yeah.
Do you ever get comfortable in that?
No, hell no.
Like after a couple jokes, like, you know, you go to a new room, you're like, all right, after I get a couple laughs under my belt, I can
then
ease into my new.
Nah, not 25,000 because you want everybody to hear the joke, so you got to pace yourself.
Oh, my God. And then you're doing that show with the crowd because you're doing stand-up, and that crowd is coming there expecting
music.
R&B, expecting rap.
Yeah,
like,
and that's hard to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, stand-up's kind of that thing where –
if your mind's in the gear for it, like if you're locked in, okay, that's one thing. But if you get surprised by it, you're like, wait, I wasn't expecting this. I want Mary J. to come out here and say.
Exactly.
So did you have to do anything different to get the crowd on your pace?
I just went on and just did my own thing because I was like the opener where everybody was just chilling. I would go out, you know, and just keep the crowd warm and do some material, whatever. But that's true because one of my worst bombs I ever had in life was at a rap concert opening for Ja Rule. And motherfuckers was throwing shit at me that should not have been at rap concerts, like golf balls. coat hangers.
They're throwing golf balls and coat hangers.
I'm like, who has a wooden coat hanger in this motherfucker?
who's going to a concert like, hey, just in case I got to keep my jacket wrinkle free, I'm going to put my jacket on this coat hanger in case a putt-putt breaks out in the back.
No, I was getting hit with everything. And those concession stand drinks, the one with the lids.
Dude, oh, God.
Because when they hit you, they pop.
They explode on you. That's heckling that. I mean, there's no preparation or
advice. The promoter was such a dick. He didn't pay me until the end of the concert, so I had to walk around just sticky, with all this coke and Sprite and shit.
The guy with the icy on you, everyone knows it's you. Coat hanger.
Everywhere I go, it's like.
it was the worst.
Yeah.
So how many days a week, Conan, is that job for you right now?
Right now? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we have an agreement now where I'll work from home. And what I do is I just like send in material. And then, you know, if it's something.
Because you're still living in Chicago.
Yeah, I go back and forth.
But you're coming back and forth.
Yeah. I'm in L.A. just as much as I'm in L.A. a lot more than Chicago, but I am in Chicago a lot, at least once every other month. I'll be in Chicago, whatever. But yeah, I work like from home. I send in material, and then if it's something warranted for me to
come in and do a live bit,
then I go and do it. It's like for something that you know that I see or something that they see. And
Now it obviously took a few years to build that sort of like camaraderie and trust with all the other writers and to be like, I don't have to be there to shoot.
Absolutely.
I don't know how at
the Black Box it was just like you know what I asked Cole. I was like, yo, if I can just go do some stand up and thank the people and touch the people and be around them. He's like, absolutely. Like, man.
It helps the show too, man.
You're an integral part of Conan's show.
Yeah.
People like know who you are as much as they know who he is, man.
Yeah.
So it's like if you're out fucking doing grassroots promoting, doing your shows and people, that's just going to make them want to watch what you do next week.
It's a win-win.
How is it in a writer's room with Conan though? Like, I mean that whole, it's when you first got the job, it was you, Conan, and then how many?
Yeah, it was intimidating. It's still intimidating. Don't get me wrong, because you still have to, you know.
Get his approval
or shit.
There's a bunch of talented writers in there too.
And you're working with a legendary dude. You know, this dude was a writer himself who wrote for Saturday Night Live,
Simpsons.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite episodes on The Simpsons was McPlow.
He wrote that, Mr. Plow.
Mr. Plow.
That's my name.
He wrote that.
And then Barney, right?
He wrote that.
Plow King. That's intense.
Do you have a different sort of mindset when you go into that? You can't sit back like you saying you do it like conversation.
No, this is serious over there. You over there with Emmy Award winning writers and
have to make a name for yourself.
Nominees, you know, and you have to come with it. You got like some smart, brilliant dudes. I mean, Conan graduated from Harvard, and you know a lot of those guys, they graduated from prestigious, you know, colleges.
Yeah.
And you got to be right on point. You got to hold your own. But I just learned instead of being like them.
Mm-hmm.
Being myself would stand out just as much as they are.
Being
who I am, and so
because that's where they hired you,
right? And so, but you have to remember that. Don't get me wrong. A lot of times you'll get in those situations and you try to do exactly what they do.
Especially if you're new to it.
Yeah, but you tend to forget that you and your own are awesome within yourself. Mm-hmm. And you just have to be you, like at all given times, because if you're not, then you're cheating the world. So that's what I decided to do. I just was like, I'm just going to be me. And, you know, it worked out that way.
It's admirable to have that mindset, man, because it's so easier said than done to get. Because getting the opportunity is enough and it is a big deal in itself. But then to, like, you know, have the awareness to go, all right, don't fucking change your shit of how you got here, just because now you're like in a new surrounding and you want to please so much that you'll start to like do stuff that's out of character.
But yeah, absolutely.
What was the first thing you did that maybe that made you go, oh shit, like that they really responded to?
And I wrote a whole bunch of sketches and stuff like that that I was doing, but the one that made him go, okay, we fucking with a monster here. This is a good thing we got going on. Yeah. I wrote this thing called Black Haunted House, and it was I went and did like a reporting thing, like at the Universal Studios where they had like the horror fest,
Halloween Horror, right. Yeah. Dude, I used to work there.
Yeah.
So I did
So I reported and went in all the haunted houses and did all the stuff for him, and then told him that wasn't as scary as like a Black Haunted House. And then it was this Black Haunted House that we created and made, where you walked up in there and inside of it was a swimming pool.
it was like a cop car going off.
Yeah, like, oh, that's the scariest.
It was a credit check report. Like, it was all this shit in this haunted house and like Wayne Brady albums and shit. So,
dude, that's hilarious.
I wrote this whole thing. Yeah. So after that, I think that was the moment. Like everybody, we all sat up. Like, okay, we see something happening.
I can do this thing.
So yeah,
because you have to have that, right? I mean, it's the same way with SNL with people having a breakout sketch. You got to have something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, something that even where they go, we trust you. Yep. We trust your ideas. The people trust you. They love it. And so that's when it was like, okay, cool. And once I got that trust, then everything became easy. It became like, okay, yeah, we can do this and we can do that. Even if we mess up, we understand that, you know, you're able to pull out of that. Yeah. You know, so it was great. After that, we was rocking and rolling.
Did you have people just hitting you up nonstop after that bit, too?
Yeah, it was nuts. It was awesome. Nuts. It was nuts, nuts.
Because, like, I mean, that's got to be as almost bigger than when you got the Tonight Show stand-up. Because now you have your own piece that you did that was like, because those pieces are a big deal, because it's like, you know.
And I kept doing them right after that. Yeah. Right after that one, I just kept doing them. Because I did one before that, but it was this thing called, we needed like a black holiday. Like everybody had a drinking day except for black people.
Oh, like, I see. Yeah, so you got October Cinco de Mayo and October Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah. We needed a black drinking day.
A black drinking day.
Yeah, so I made up a drinking day. And I was like, and all the black people that worked there, we all left the studio. So because we was like, we off that day. Yeah. But then after that, then that's when the black horror for Hollywood, the Halloween fest. And then after that, it was this thing where it was like, okay. And we just started doing these bits, and we just kept doing these bits, and these bits were just popping out. And then, you know, all of a sudden that, you know, Jay Leno thing happened.
Yeah. What was that like to be backstage and in the trenches when all that shit's going on? Because not only do you have an extremely, like, a job that has a ton of pressure on it, which is doing a nightly, you know, talk show, but then you have all this shit, like, are we fired? Are we the Tonight Show? How long is this going to last?
I was new to all of that, so I thought that was how television... I was like, this is how television is. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that we were going down in history.
Yeah, no kidding.
I just thought this is just how television people acted. You know what I'm saying? And so I had no idea that this was history right here. And
were the writers like hesitant? Was it something that everyone was talking about, but then no one was?
Well, everybody basically was just like, you know what? Let's just keep doing us. Let's keep having fun. Let's keep writing these bits. Let's banging out stuff, and let's just have fun, man. And just like let's worry about the world later and what they got to say, and we'll figure that out later. And Conan and all of them there, they'll handle that. Our jobs is to stay funny and keep it going. And so that's what we did.
The support was like outrageous too.
Yeah, the support was insane. Yeah,
people just came out. I mean, I
Team Coco stuff.
Oh, yeah. It was crazy.
I don't know if you ever saw. Can you guys hear that fucking staticky thing?
Yeah. Is that coming through on the? Can we?
There it is. It's gone.
Oh, he's moving the laptop.
Oh, nice.
It's gone now.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay.
I did this video, she showed it to you, where I did, because I do a pretty good Jay Leno, right?
I mean, just look at me like this, like, yeah, cool. So I was like, really, can I take your show over? I should have had you on as a guest, but you and Kevin could have hung out. You know Kevin, you know, you guys have a lot in common. You know, you like golf and you're black, but, you know.
No, but, so I dressed up full on, like, makeup and chin and everything. I'll have to send you. I went down to that Team Coco rally as Jay, and I interviewed people. And so, first of all, I showed up there, and nobody was having it. So I was basically interviewing
you're the
people.
You're the bad guy.
I did for Funny or Die, and it basically you know, interviewing, like, you know, and just being Jay and just, you know, kind of doing a mockery of him as a character, yeah, of being like, you know, and doing shitty jokes. And
crazy.
Then at the end, I walked out of the middle of the street and people were telling me to get out. And I was like kicking a Conan sign. And then at the end, I was just, but it was just, you know, just to get treated.
Wasn't it wild?
It was wild, but it was awesome. And Conan came, this was like the day where like poured rain.
I was out there that night, when he ran down the street.
Yes,
I was right behind him.
That was incredible.
It was an incredible day.
And so, I mean, that must have been, I mean.
We was in the rain, running through the rain. I remember that. I was right behind him. We was running right down Lancashire.
Well, Dion, see, here's the thing. We have Jay Leno right here. So is there anything you want to say to Jay Leno? Now that.
Keep it clean. My kid to watch it.
I mean, he's right here. I don't know if you want to, like, say what's up to him or say, hey, you know, why'd you be a little Indian giver right there? Why'd you give us a show? Take it back. Yeah. What the hell?
And tell me about your chin-chin tour or whatever it was. Yeah, the chitlin tour. Whatever, the chin-chin?
Chitlin tour. That's hilarious.
Mean, now, if you have you spoken to Jay or met him or met him since then?
Oh.
No. Was there a hostility towards
I love that you just assumed that maybe like you like went after him or something.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
Sure maybe I'm assuming it's like Conan and Dion, like the Jets and the Sharks, like West Side Story. They're all snapping, like, you know, doing that. I don't know. But like, was there any ill feelings, or was it more like we understand it's a business and the decisions that are happening here are
like I said, I was oblivious because I thought that's how I thought that was television. I just got there. I didn't know how we was going down in history. Like I thought this was all television. This is how it works. And I'm sitting up like, wow, this is crazy. Yeah. This goes down like this. Like,
this can happen to anybody.
Like, this happens to all television shows, huh? Mm-hmm. This is nuts. And then people was like, no, this is something else. And then I started feeling it. And then we went on tour. That's when I really
Yo, I went to that, by the way, at the amphitheater. You were incredible.
That's
right. Did you open that shit?
Yeah, closed it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, that's right. After Reggie opened it, maybe, no?
Yeah, Reggie opened.
Okay, that's right.
Reggie opened. Yes, he did.
And you closed that shit,
yeah,
dude.
I was closing that shit.
Strong, too, bitch.
And you're closing a show, I think, at the
after
L.A. show.
Jim
was that Jim Carrey?
After Jim Carrey. It was me. Oh, that was crazy, right?
You never forget that.
You never forget that. No.
Did you walk off and look at Jim and go, all right?
No, every city, though. Every city, I had to come after whoever the main star was in that city or whoever was hot. Like,
when we
were in Seattle, I had to come on after Eddie Vedder.
Fuck. That's my hometown.
I had to come on after Eddie
Vedder. Oh, that's right. And Dave Matthews came in on
Dave
that
Matthews
show.
And I had to come on after Dave Matthews.
You can't get any bigger than that.
No, it was crazy.
Seattle's like, unless fucking just a giant coffee bean comes out and like fucking jizzes coffee on the audience. I don't know how else they can top those two.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So what's your mentality? Is you're just like, I've been doing this.
It's that same mentality that I have, which is, you know, I have to do this, and I only can be me. There's only one me, and be me.
Nobody.
Dude, that's awesome, though. Like, you have to have those little moments with yourself.
You have to have those moments that you go, okay, that's Jim Carrey. That's Eddie Vedder. Okay, so you know what? I have to be me. It's only one you. Do you, and that's all you can do.
Yeah.
You can't do nothing else. So that's what my mind frame was. That's what I did.
That tour, I watched the documentary on Netflix about it, which was a great documentary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like you guys were riding that tour like as you were going.
Yeah, as we was going, we was riding the tour as it was happening. Like every day we were like, add something else to it. We knew what we were going to do, but we didn't know how we were going to do it.
Right.
That's what it was. So every day we had the format, but how we executed it was totally different, like each night.
Right. And that just kind of shows what it takes to succeed in this business when you look at a guy like Conan, like yourself. Like, Conan's got $500 million in the bank or whatever. Yeah. He's good, but he's still, and you've seen that documentary, he's still stressing out about
stressing
the live show
out.
And like working everyone.
Yes.
And like saying, no, let's get this shit right. Let's put on a great show. He's got nothing to worry about. He
it
can
ain't
phone
even
it
about
in if you
money
want to.
No more.
No,
it ain't
not
about money. It was never about money with any, it's never about money with none of these networks. They, they gave him, you got to understand, they gave this man $45 million to be quiet. Like, that's power. It ain't about money no more. It's about, yo, we don't want you saying nothing. We want you off TV for 7 months.
Yeah.
So you can't do nothing. No radio, no television, no internet for 7 months. Here's $45 million. Go sit your ass down somewhere. So he decided to go on tour.
Because they knew people would kind of like, maybe it would like simmer down a little bit if they just got rid of him, right?
Yeah. So people stop being so upset. It's never about money, right? And so even with Conan, no matter how much money he has, it gets to a certain level where money doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
It's just all about you wanting to create, you wanting to be great at what you do,
right?
And you want to be known for what you do, and Conan is one of those guys that he loves to make people laugh.
Sure, and you are too, because you got the gig on Conan, and a lot of comics, if they get a writing gig on a late night show, like, okay, they're done. They have a writing gig on a late night show.
Yeah,
no,
great.
You're still out there hitting it. You're still doing stand up. Yeah. You got the new TBS show coming out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's Angie Tribeca.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's with Rashida Jones.
Yeah, Rashida
Wait, no
Jones.
Shit, you're in that?
Yeah.
Dude, that's incredible.
Yeah,
Carell's doing that.
Yeah, he directed him and Nancy and Stancy Carell, him and his wife. Yeah.
You motherfucker.
Yeah. TBS, man.
Dude, Carell's like a god to me.
Yeah, that's my man, man. Like, that dude is, he's great. Him and his wife, Nancy, they're fantastic directors and writers.
Dude,
and,
I'm so pumped for you, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah, the show is, it's like Naked Gun. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to tell people, man, some people be like, oh, that show isn't going to be nothing or whatever, it's stupid. And it's like, I try to tell everybody, everything ain't going to be Batman, motherfucker. Everything ain't gonna be the motherfucking
that
Batman.
That might be my favorite quote that's ever been said on this podcast.
Hey, don't tell that to Keith Sweat when he wrote Twisted. He was like, not everything be Batman 1, 2, and 3.
Everybody's just
you're right.
Everybody wants Batman.
The best.
Man.
Yeah.
It's just like everything can't be Batman.
Yo, tweet at Dion Cole. Is it Dion Cole on Twitter?
Yeah.
Tweet at Dion Cole after this podcast. Hashtag everything can't be Batman, motherfucker.
Everything can't be Batman, bitches. There's some other shit out there. There's other good shit out there. So plus to do this satire is great. It's great.
But then like I don't see why it's not going to be a hit when you look at the people behind it. I mean, first of all, Steve Carell, comedy
Absolutely.
God.
Yes.
You got Rashida Jones, you got yourself, you got in the pilot Lisa Kudrow makes an appearance.
Yes, yes.
Nice. Yeah, Lisa Kudrow.
Quincy Jones, Peggy Lipton, which is she's the original member of the Mod Squad, which is also Rashida's real mother, and Quincy Jesus. Jones is her real father.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So her real parents are playing her parents on the show.
That's so great.
And every show, every episode, Rashida's partner dies. She dies a horrific death. She has a new partner every episode.
So it's like a self-harm situation?
Yeah, every episode she gets a new partner.
What a great concept. Because then you could have like an insane guest stars.
Every week.
Yeah, that's just Neo City, man.
Every week. Yeah, it's crazy. Dude, it's a great show, but people, you know, I just want people to give it a chance to check it out and open their minds and see some different funny shit, man.
Like,
you know,
that's the best part about like things like TBS expanding, man. Like, and you guys going over there and making it another place for people to go for content.
Yeah,
man.
Absolutely. You know, that's what we're trying to do.
When's the show come out?
We start shooting the end of this year. The end of this year, the beginning of 2015, we start shooting.
You know what's dope about that too, man, is like, you know, obviously, you know, you're already crushing with stand-up, but it's like, when you start getting the TV and movie stuff going, the stand-up take, it just, they go hand in hand. So it's like, when that show comes out, then you get to go fucking do even more stand-up, like,
and that's
in
what
a cooler...
The goal, ain't that the goal? Goal is just to do these things, to, you know, actually practice what you do. You love to act, you love to do stand-up. But at the end of the day, it's just to get more fans to do more stand-up. You know what I'm saying?
No,
it's always about the stand-up,
It really is, and I try to tell people that it's like, I would love to act and I would love to be on shows, movies, whatever, but you do that just so I can keep touring.
So I can keep touring.
And people keep coming out
people
to the shows.
People come to the shows. That's what it's about. There's more people at your shows.
Yeah. You know what's funny, too, is like when I having stand-up, too, is just like the best. You forget how much of a, like, we're always going to have this, you know?
Yeah,
like, when
absolutely.
I got back from doing the movie, Bobby Lee was like, hey, it was great. He's like, you're probably, like, hopefully it's a good, you know, kickoff point.
Yeah.
Open some more doors. He's like, but you know, man, you're always going to, because I came right back and it opened up a lot of, like, headline opportunities.
Uh-huh.
But then, you know, it was like,
I didn't fucking jump into like five more movies right after, which is like what your friends back home think. Because like, dude, now you're in one. Now you just Spielberg's calling tomorrow, right? Like, it's not how this works, man.
You show up to the movie factory and they just hand you a script. Today you're washing Billy Crystal's balls today. Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
Sure. Well, I would actually do that without her.
That was a great look. That I loved you in the movie.
Oh, thanks, man. But it was like having stand up. Like once that died down, I mean, obviously it opened. You know, I got more headline opportunities, but it also once that stopped, it was like being able to go up and just do that all the time. Having that be the consistent in your life is like. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's
one day I saw an interview. I saw an interview with Will Smith, and this was when Will Smith had Wild Wild West out.
Okay,
and the movie, and he had
and the song.
He had the song.
Right.
He had the number one movie,
number one song.
Whoa, let's
just take a moment to recognize that Wild Wild West was the number one song in the country
and the number one movie. It was the number one song and number one movie in the country, and he still had Fresh Prince on television. So he was killing, and they had an interview with him, and they asked him, they like, dude, you are reigning the world right now. Like, what else do you want? And he replied, I'm not going to be happy until Hollywood comes to me with scripts first. They go to Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, Denzel Washington, and then they'll go to him. He was like, he's not going to be happy until they go to him first with scripts. And that just made me go, you're never going to be happy with this shit.
Yeah.
You're going to always find some bullshit to be mad about. Right. Like, you're going to, or it's not that, or it's the fact that you grind so much.
Yeah.
That after you make all these accomplishments, you start making up accomplishments. Like, I want to be this guy.
Oh, my God. That's a great way to look at it. You're like, I want my son to take over for Ralph Macchio. Like, he probably got super pissed that wasn't happening. Right. But it happened.
Now he's like making up things for his kids. Yeah. Like, listen, until my 13-year-old daughter can tell people to whip their hair back and forth, I will not be happy in Hollywood.
She will be named after a midget warrior that Val Kilmer starred in. Right? Is her name Willow?
Her name is Willow.
That was a lot.
How did you pull that reference and not me?
And I like that.
Dude, Willow's one of my favorite movies. You have no idea how excited I was when we first became friends.
You're like, I got one now.
Oh, no. I got one. Also, I was like, I get to meet Willow at some point. Because I figured he was a couple doors down.
Listen, buddy. You are my friend, but we're not going to just let you into the meetings right away. You gotta hold up, okay? I mean, I know that me, Dinklage, we all meet under the carousel at Disneyland secretly.
That's a legit thing that went through my head, though, where I was just like, I'm going to meet Willow at some point. Because I just didn't know. You don't know. We've talked about this many times, and Brad has this, a great bit in his act now about it. Like, certain things, like he got in this fight and fucking did a...
This dude wanted to fight me, and like, he was legit wanting to fight me, and he started, like, coming at me, and I don't know what to do. Like, I can't fight. So I just looked at him, and I yelled out, Hadouken, and did, like...
Hadouken?
Yeah, from the fucking Street Fighter 2. And I yelled at and this fucker flinched. He flinched because
like he was going to throw a fireball, and the guy flinched. Because he's like, I don't know what these guys are capable of.
Yeah, he can do this shit. Why not? You don't know. Oh, hell, they make cookies, they dance under rainbows, they can throw fireballs. Why
that
the fuck
is
not?
Hilarious.
And he flinched, then he fucking ran away. That won a fight.
He thought midgets were the closest we're going to get to video game, like, combat fights.
That is hilarious.
People don't know. They hang out with me. They think they're going to be hard. They think they'll be doing coke with pure Dinklage pretty soon.
You're a big sports fan, yeah?
I like sports. I'm not one of them guys that know like statistics and what school everybody came from.
Right. Well, that's something.
Like I'm one of them guys.
But you know how the games work.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in Chicago is your. I mean, you grew up with Jordan.
Absolutely.
You just got
to
talk
Bull
about.
Fan, gotta be.
You got to talk about what that was like because I grew up with Griffey, which I feel like is.
Oh yeah, which
on the same
great.
Level because like you know I mean obviously
he's a monster.
Yeah, not to the extent of Jordan, but Griffey. Right. I think the same way Jordan changed the game of basketball, changed the game of baseball.
Yeah, and the town just rallied behind him in a crazy
yeah,
way.
It was incredible. Yeah, so like crazy. Mike, I mean, like what was, I mean, just,
I mean, it was insanity. It was mm-hmm. insanity in Chicago. Every Bulls game was a party. It was like, it was a place where if you came into work the next day hungover, your boss understood. Like,
because it was
you,
a Bulls win.
Yeah, like, hey, he'll let go
Bulls
let
home
you,
game.
Yeah, like, yo, go get some rest and come in later.
Wow.
Like, it was like yeah, that
you can
kind
thank
of,
B.J. Armstrong
it was,
for that three-pointer.
Yeah, it was yeah. crazy. It was crazy in Chicago. It was nuts, man. I mean,
that's like that's like a Tyson fight 40 days a year.
40 days a year.
That's
every,
crazy.
Every night the Bulls played, it was a party.
Fuck.
Extremely. Like, it was nuts.
So jealous.
Yeah, it was retarded, man.
Now, have you gotten a chance to meet him yet? Like, with all
Jordan?
The stuff you've done?
Yeah, I met Jordan. I met Jordan twice. And dude. I had to reintroduce myself, but I met him twice.
But
yes,
but you don't mind doing that?
Nah,
it's Michael
Jordan.
Jordan.
Yeah, it's Jordan. Like in Chicago, so everybody know everybody in Chicago.
Oh, really?
You might not even know their name, but you know them, and they know you, and
mm-hmm.
you know you're giving nod to each other and hey, what's happening? But everybody know everybody from Chicago.
Is that a known thing about the city? Is it like it's
yeah,
just a very
absolutely,
warm...
especially if you're like in the entertainment business or you're yeah. playing ball because a lot
because there's
the,
tons.
Yeah, a lot of the drug dealers and gangsters and you know pimps or whatever they give you a pass and really call you like a chosen one they'll say that you're a chosen one to
no
keep,
shit.
Keep you out of the streets and if anybody was fucking with you they made sure like nah he on the right path you know he wow. he gonna be a lawyer he gonna be a comedian he gonna be an actor like leave him the fuck alone
I want my mom to listen to that quote simply because you said you could be a lawyer or a comedian like you said that in the same breath
yeah no
like, yeah
real.
Same thing mom yeah,
like Don Bishop Wine he was another one that used to always look out for us like he'll be
no
like
shit.
Yo yeah like
is he
like,
from Chicago
yeah
Bishop Don the Magic Wine
yeah. Yeah, you'll be like, yo, leave them the fuck alone and let them do their craft and don't
wow.
fuck with them.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
and you've met Obama, right?
You know what? I met Obama once at this rally he had in Chicago
nice.
For like building this park. Mm-hmm. That he was doing in Chicago. This is before he was
governor. Senator.
Yeah, before he was senator. I mean, yeah.
Jesus.
This is before all of that. Yeah, because we used to have this thing in Chicago called Increase the Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to throw these shows in certain neighborhoods in order to rally up to keep gang members and stuff down.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, he used to be a part of a couple of them.
And when you met him, was there like any sort of inkling in your head like, this guy is something special? Like this.
I just always was like, man, I wish we had more people like him.
That's
I didn't
cool.
know he was going to be president.
Right.
I just always like, yeah. man, it'd be cool for us to have more people like him.
It's awesome.
Oh, that's good.
But I never knew he was going to be president.
That's definitely a strong presence if you're making people.
Yeah,
like,
he was just one of them guys that was real educated and real concerned about
sure.
you know people.
That's good.
So that was just all I knew about him, you know, and that's all that I got from him.
Did him and Oprah come from the same part of Chicago? Because I feel like they've got the same sort of concern in their yeah.
Yeah, Oprah moved to Chicago like in the early 80s. She got there, I think. And she just took that motherfucker over by storm.
Wait, yes, you were there too when that was happening.
Yeah, I was over there when that was
Hardcore Studios.
Fuck asking about how it was growing up in the Jordan era. How was it growing up in the Oprah era?
What? You get an Oprah ticket. That was just as good as going to a Bulls game. Goddamn shit.
Quote of the fucking podcast, dude. That is the best thing ever.
That's real.
He's got the two winners of the
yeah.
night. The not everything's Batman,
yeah.
motherfucker. And going to the Oprah was a hard ticket than going to the Bulls.
Dude, but I 110% believe that because I've always said, dude, like the like going to an Oprah, like the amount of excitement in women's bodies at Oprah tapings is equivalent to like. Fuck, I don't know. Like,
dude, they were lining up like there were strippers in there, dude. Like, that's how Oprah's show was. And it was some of the baddest.
Just to be in the presence.
Some of the finest women in Chicago. All of them with jobs, all look good, all ain't about no bullshit. It was beautiful women going to Oprah shit. So if you got a ticket to Oprah shit, you was doing it.
Oh, my God.
That's like better than the hottest nightclub in the city.
Better than any nightclub in the city.
Oprah's. She should open a strip club called Oprah's.
Oprah's. go on that motherfucking
and
gig.
It's filled with just audience members. All past audience members.
Look under your chairs. You get a dollar bill. You get a dollar bill. You get a dollar. Everybody gets a dollar bill.
Everybody gets the dollar
bill. You get some strawberry lube. You get some strawberry lube.
That's hilarious.
So now you have the stand-up going on. You have the show that's coming out. Is there something like, what's your Will Smith thing? Like what's your thing that where you're looking for that,
I just wanna
that's going
to
make
I want to produce more television content. That's mm-hmm. my thing now. After producing my own show, Black Box, man, yeah. I got to taste it. Yeah, and that tastes.
It's the best. You're in creative
good.
Control. Come on, man.
Ooh, that tastes.
That's why
good.
We do stand up, man. You're your boss.
Ooh,
oh, yeah,
that tastes
dude.
So
what
good.
What it tastes like.
Oh, man.
Oprah pussy.
Yes, that's it what it tastes like.
Tastes like motherfucking Oprah pussy.
Yeah, watching Batman.
Yeah.
Watching Batman eating Oprah pussy. That's what it tastes like. Yeah. Seeing Batman for the first time.
Yeah.
And eating Oprah pussy. That's what it is. Yeah, so I want to get more content and more shows, man. But, you know, I just wish everybody just wouldn't worry about their jobs and play it safe so they can keep their spaces and all that. And people take more chances and go with the times. And, you know, I think that this is a good time to take chances, you know, and let people come with better ideas and, you know, shake the game up a little bit.
Sure.
But people can do that. The people that are in control, then man, it'll be great. But that's my goal right now. And like I said, I got a couple other shows in the pipeline, a couple other shows that I'm writing right now, and a few shows that I'm doing. So
I got no doubt it's going to happen because I mean you branded yourself. That Black Box helped to just to like open the door for like the Beyond Cold brand.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know I'm grateful for people who loved it, and I'm grateful for all the networks that seen what we did and appreciated it and want more of it. So.
Dude, soon Brad and I are going to be attending tapings of the Dion Cole show just to fucking see the ladies.
That's right. We're going to be out there giving some fine honeys at the Dion Cole show.
And you better have Keith Sweat as a musical guest on the pilot episode. Otherwise,
nobody.
Follow Dion on Twitter at Dion Cole. All your tour dates at your website, right? DionCole.com?
Yeah, it's all on there. Absolutely.
And the show, you're going to tape it next year and look for that. It's called, what again?
Tribeca. Yeah, Tribeca on TBS. Rashida Jones.
You're the best, dude. You're one of the coolest dudes in the fucking business.
Man.
And taking time to do this on top of everything you're doing is the best.
Dude,
and
you all are great. And that's why I'm doing it. Because you guys have always been awesome. And thanks a lot, man. It's
of course.
Fun.
Well, also, we knew you knew Keith Sweat, and we're hoping to get him on the podcast. So, Keith, if you're listening, man. Thanks, Dion.
Thanks. All right.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.